from the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep, and when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience, because Purple mattresses are made with a GelFlex grid. The GelFlex grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips, and support in others, like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the GelFlex grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines GelFlex grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off.
For the first time, U.S. subscribers can stream MLB Network 24/7, including select out-of-market games.
Swing and a drive. It's deep. It's good. Yes!
Stream minor league affiliates.
Home run number one.
Or trap pick number one.
Plus, get MLB Big Inning and live audio for all 30 teams.
Baseball can't get better than this.
Experience the game like never before with MLB Network and At-Bat, your all-in-one baseball destination. Only $6.99 per month. Visit MLB.com/At-Bat for details. Blackout and other restrictions apply. MLB trademarks used with permission.
All right, here we go on a Thursday. It's Cody and Gold live at Chiefs training camp in St. Joe. Full padded practice going on. Could be about a two-hour one today. We'll get to some camp observations in just a little bit. We also have a couple people stopping by. Matt Verderam from Fanside, or excuse me, from SI.
You're listening to his old workplace.
Used to be.
They get bought out by the – no, that was like maybe a rumor.
Anyway, from SI, he's going to join us a little bit later on in the show. He's at camp. Normally we have him on the phone. He's going to join us in person. And we saw Danen Hughes up here, and there's a chance he'll stop by as well. He was up here in the alumni tent, so we'll see if Danen Hughes, Chiefs color analyst for the Chiefs Radio Network, is going to join us. Good-sized crowd, at least in the tent area where we're at. Overall, another hot one here in St. Joe, so that's impacting some of the numbers on a weekday. Let's get to those camp observations, though, real quick, Cody, because Kadarius Toney and Nick Bolton here on the field but not practicing, and that's probably expected after yesterday's injury news. The ankle for Toney and the elbow or forearm for Nick Bolton.
Yeah, I think I would have been surprised if they were able to get on the field this quickly after they both left kind of late in practice yesterday, too. Now, look, they haven't given us a real update. I would think that if it was something more serious with Bolton, some NFL insider would have heard something by now. I mean, you've seen Adam Schefter. He sends out people while they're live getting MRIs. I think he might know an MRI tech at some of these hospitals. So, like, at that point, maybe I would have seen something. Toney didn't appear to have his ankle taped up. So, like, as much as they were calling it the ankle, looked like he was just, like, in tennis shoes, essentially, or cleats with no particular
wrapping. Good enough to walk.
Just giving him one more day before practice tomorrow. Hard to say for sure, but I would say that that's probably in the case. But, yeah, no practice for them today, which means, I don't know, a little more work for the other linebackers, certainly. And as we've said, at wide receiver, there was a time last year, 1 year ago today, you told me Kadarius Toney went down and wasn't practicing, and that they were, what, a week away? A little over a week away from their first preseason game? I'd have been a little worried, Gold. I'd have been a little concerned.
Well, it didn't happen. Last year. First day of practice last year, he got hurt on a punt return, and then he was out of camp the entire time. We were talking about, man, are they going to have him back for the opener against the Lions? And oh, they had him back for the opener against the Lions. Yeah. He had an impact.
Now, what level of importance is he as a player to the Chiefs? You know, honestly, we've talked about, he's wide receiver 6, man. I'm not going to panic.
Correct.
Bolden, I care about. I'd like him to get back to practice as soon as humanly possible. I was worried holding his forearm, looking at his elbow. Maybe he just, like, elbow hurt a little bit and it was hot.
He's a starting middle linebacker for your team that's going for a three-peat. You know, there's no question.
I only respect backup middle linebackers.
Yeah, well, there are some backups getting some run today with the ones because of the because of the Nick Bolton injury. That's usually how this thing works. One other observation, though, we noticed, we've talked throughout camp that Kingsley Sulamataia is getting the reps with the ones and then Wanye rotating in. There is no rotation today. There is no rotation. The left tackle getting snaps with the entire with the ones the entire time so far is just Kingsley. So if there was any question anymore about, like, hey, barring a complete collapse or an injury, Kingsley Suamataia, I think, is the starting left tackle for this football team.
I think it's done. Like, I don't want to I think the race is complete. Is that hyperbole? Am I going too far?
I think it's a good assessment of the situation.
I thought he was already kind of ahead of the game as it was previously set up anyway, Gold. And then if you add into the fact that now they're, again, about a week away from the start of camp, and he is getting most, if not all, the first-team reps, he's the starter. He's the left tackle. Which, if you had asked me yesterday, and we had talked briefly about it to end the show, Andy was saying he was comfortable with both, which we can talk about. Like, I would have been fine with that. Kingsley getting all the snaps, I'm good there if that's the way they're going to go with it. And so, look, I wanted it to be an open competition, but they seem like they're already kind of leaning a direction.
We are broadcasting from the Comcast Business Tent, powering possibilities, and our camp coverage is presented by Technology Group Solutions, the official IT provider of your Kansas City Chiefs. So we'll keep an eye on practice today. We also are expecting to hear from Clyde Edwards-Helaire, who is back at practice for the second day in a row. We all know a couple days ago he was out with an illness. We learned from his own personal Twitter account he was dealing with some PTSD. So it'll actually be interesting to hear from Clyde talk about maybe that and just where he's at and his role on this team. And I think that could be really interesting to hear in the 11 o'clock hour, probably closer to 11:30, honestly, based off of what's expected to be a long practice in pads today. But let's talk about the Royals. The calendar has turned to the month of August. It
so
is August
1st. 2 months of baseball left.
That's
before
it, man.
The playoffs.
That's it.
Normally, it's 2 months of baseball left. But I get to say until the playoffs now because they're currently occupy a spot.
That's right. 11 games above 500. They're 60-49. We know they're six back in the Central, but they are in second. They're tied, actually, with the Twins for that. We know they're tied for the second wild card spot. And you said it, yeah, it's 2 months left in the home stretch of the season now, and the race really is on to the finish line for this ball club. And yesterday, they complete the sweep of the Chicago White Sox, and out of the entire game, other than Bobby once again having another really nice day.
I don't know, man. It was pretty weak. He only had two hits and two walks. And
you know, how could he not get
multiple times?
How could he not get three hits and make sure he actually had a 500 month of July?
Instead, he only hit 489.
Yeah, that's
pretty weak.
Not acceptable, honestly. It just isn't. You know,
I thought he was a superstar.
It's not good enough for Bobby. You know, to finish with 44 hits in July in 23
games. Do something
games.
Only Lou Gehrig back in, like, the aughts was in the 30s or 40s. But, like,
I hear you. But they've won 12 of their last 18. So the team as a whole is, and a lot of it has to do with Bobby, but the team as a whole is playing well. And yesterday, it's one outing, but one of the arms they acquired, you saw why they acquired him, and you're like, oh, okay. This is a little different. Lucas Irvsig, 100 miles an hour on the corner. They're not getting that from anybody else all year. And I know it's a small sample size for him, but that right there, that's why it's exciting to have him on your team now. He has the ability to do that.
Yes, and if we consider this conversation a state of the union, it's August 1st, Gold, you and I both know they got 60 days left in this bad boy, and then we got to find out whether or not they're going to be a playoff team. As it sits right now, I cannot emphasize how optimistic you should feel about the Royals. Their biggest weakness was bullpen, and they got a guy last night, it appears, who they got 5 years of control on, throwing the ball 100 miles an hour on the paint.
That was the best velocity in an inning from a reliever they've seen of it all year.
And actually had control.
Yeah.
I've seen Will Klein throw that fast.
Yeah, but not spotting it like that.
No, I've seen Cole Reagans throw that fast, and he maybe can't spot it like that. But when you not out of the bullpen, late in the game, to finish the absolute beatdown of the White Sox on the season series. They finished 12-1 against Chicago. But look at where you wake up this morning. You have the best player in baseball. Okay, great. You have a top-five rotation as of August 1st, and these things are all true. We are this far into the season. You have the best player in baseball, or top-two player in baseball as they're playing right now. You have a top-three rotation in baseball and have the entire season. You have the third-best run differential in all of the American League. The only two teams who have done a better job at beating teams than you are the New York Yankees and the Baltimore Orioles. They have a better run differential this morning than the Cleveland Guardians. So, like, they're doing their job. And I understand the records are different. And I tried to point out last night to the same people, like, oh, good for you for beating up on the White Sox. Look, I think you can spin it however you want. But if you want me to spin it the negative, the Cleveland Guardians are 5-5 against the White Sox. Shouldn't they be concerned? They can't mop up that sad sack of an organization?
Yeah, you're right.
Well, they finished better. Of course, but you can spin it how you want.
You can.
The point is, run differential-wise, the Royals and the Guardians are very similar. I think the Royals and the Guardians are similarly good teams. Okay? And, yeah, they got the advantage because they played better during a middle stretch that gave them a six-game lead. So they are the most likely, by a long shot, to win the division. But the Royals can compete with a team like the Guardians. And when they face them again in a couple of weeks.
No matter how skeptical anybody has been all year and the flaws that exist, I think everybody's acknowledged if they can get in this thing into the postseason, because it's a three-game series of a wild card series and knowing the rotation, that's something I think most people feel good about. If you can, you got to get there first, and they're luckily now in the second wild card spot. But yeah, the Guardians thing and the Royals only being what a game or two above 500 outside of the games against the White Sox and all that—that's something that people are going to reference. If this team makes the playoffs, Cody, people are going to use that against them when they when they play a playoff team.
So they don't know how to be good.
And on the flip side, people aren't going to mention the Guardians' record against the White Sox. They're going to say, "Hey, against the other playoff teams, they had a better record, let's say, than the Royals or whatever." Some of this is going to get sorted out anyway because the Royals, after this series. With four games against the Tigers starting tonight, then you play another playoff team in Boston. Then you have the Cardinals, who are obviously in the National League playing a lot better baseball and in position perhaps to be a wild card team there as well on the National League side. And we know later in the month, at the very end of the month actually, you get the Guardians and you have the Astros in the middle of this month.
Boston in like 4 days or next week.
Yep, Monday or Tuesday.
I think it's really easy to forget because of the success the Royals have had. And I actually think that Bobby Wood Jr. kind of warps your perception of this a little bit, in a way, because he's so good, you don't think he's... Can we just not pretend for a minute that the Royals had to spend, and should have had to spend, a good chunk of this year learning what it was like to be good? Like, I'll go back through, and I know the Royals' record is 13-19. I think I looked it up yesterday. 13-19 against teams currently in the playoffs. NL or AL. Currently in the playoffs, they're 13-19. And a lot of good teams are more like 500, Gold, right? You know, they tend to play 500 baseball against those, and essentially the White Sox are what are making up the difference. But you and I both know that it's not in a vacuum. I watched the Orioles series where they let some games slip away. I watched the first Red Sox series where they let some games slip away. I've watched them blow games they should have won because they didn't know who they were yet, how to win yet, what their identity was. They didn't have the full complexity of their bullpen built like they do now. They didn't know who to trust or who not to trust. They're different. They're better than they were 2 months ago when they were losing those games. I think if you put them in that same stretch, they don't let all those games slip away. Maybe a couple because those teams are good too, Gold. But you veer back towards 500 where I think the run differential over the course of a baseball season is maybe the most telling stat about how good a team is and the third best in the American League. I'm feeling great about where the Royals are.
If there's one thing that I actually think matters more than, you know, the White Sox, Royals record against the White Sox, which has been flat-out domination, it is the closing out the rubber games of series, because that's where they are multiple games under 500. And so now, most likely, like you swept the White Sox, maybe you get three or four against the Tigers, but when you play Boston or the Guardians, you're probably not sweeping them, so you're going to be in some rubber matches again, right? You're going to be in some game threes of these three-game series or game four of these four-game series, and you're going to have to win a clincher. And that's something that they have, for whatever reason, struggled with.
Yeah, it is.
You know, that's the one that they have to be better in those games. You know, diving deeper, is that what has happened in each one of those? You know, did they have leads in those late and they blew them? Do they never have leads? I haven't dove into each one, but they are multiple games above or under 500, I'm sorry, in clinching games. That's a bigger story to me as we get into every game mattering and certainly some games that are essentially going to be playoff-type series against the Guardians later on.
Yeah, and they're going to have to, and you're right, because most likely scenario at this point is they're playing in the wild card round. And you and I could both see a game in which the series is tight. They win game one, they lose game two, and then it's about that thing that's stuck all season long so far, which is, can you get that third one? It's cool to win the first one because it makes it a lot easier to win the series. But can you get that second one? I still think that the reason why this, I mean, and we know this, but like the reason why you should feel so good is like they have a great rotation. great rotations can do things in the postseason other teams can't. We can talk about a question that I think Dusty asked on the air a couple of days ago that's worth discussing in a few minutes. But, yeah, as a general state of the union for where the Royals are starting the second to last month of their season, I feel fantastic.
We are broadcasting live from Chiefs training camp. Again, we'll get back into the Royals coming up in about 15 minutes or so. But when we think about this Chiefs team and you look at a roster and you look at a team that's coming off back-to-back championships and you're trying to figure out, okay, well, what could be the flaw? They're hard to find. You do these different interviews across the country. They're asking, like, okay, what's the biggest concern heading into camp?
And we missed the biggest concern last year, let's be honest.
Right. Wide receiver, I think people questioned it, but nobody thought it was going to be as bad as what it ended up being. This year, there's the obvious, I think, of if there was an issue. There's really only two spots, but what's the area you think we could be missing out on? Because I think the most likely problem spot actually is going to be the number two corner, if you were guessing.
Nobody's won the job?
Yeah, I think they have tons of depth there. How many teams have a lockdown one and two? Not many. The Chiefs have Trent McDuffie. So it's nitpicking, but if you're making me guess, I could see it being the number two spot only because, yeah, Spags even said a few days ago, nobody's emerged really as a number two corner. I think this is going to work out, but if you're making me pick a potential flaw in a team that is coming off a championship, that's the favorite once again to win the Super Bowl, number two corner would be that area.
I'll be honest, I asked myself this question because I realized as we're up here at camp, how badly we all whiffed on wide receiver, because I might have been more concerned than most people, and even I didn't think it was going to be the thing that might have sunk them, and it didn't, right? They won the Super Bowl and all of those things, but it was the single biggest caveat that might have stopped them from doing it. So I was trying to really think. I was like, all right, what is the thing I'm missing? What is the potential weakness at camp that I might be missing? And corner and left tackle, or tackle in general, seem like the obvious. But I'm going to give you a sneaky one, because the history of the NFL suggests to us that the consistency of this group does not hold year, 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 year without a change in personnel, which there hasn't been. Defensive line. They have a proven track record, and I can't deny that. But they're just going back to the well again and hoping that everybody's the same. Dana and Turk and Aminihue back from the injury eventually. They're just kind of hoping everybody stays the same and that, like, Felix or some of these other guys maybe replace if somebody can't hold up on their end. I'm not overly worried about it, but it's a position that I've started thinking more about, because very rarely in the NFL just going back and doing the same thing again work. And that's what they're doing at the defensive lines. They haven't changed personnel at all. It's the exact same group.
I hear you, but also that's where I think the number two corner could cause problems for the defensive line.
It's going to be harder for them to get there.
But at the same time, Cody, they're returning players, but you know, you're returning Chris Jones, who is a top 5-7 player in football,
one of the best
right?
players in the league.
You know what I mean? And Carl Loftus, you're returning, and he's in year three, and he had 10.5 sacks. I hear you. I think where I agree with you within that conversation would be the Charles Aminihue portion, which is he missed games last year, but then he came back and he was great.
Yes.
And provided them plenty of sacks. Now he's not available till end of October, perhaps. Maybe it's that Raiders game, his first game back in Vegas. And is he the same player? And if he's not, then where do you make up that? I think that's fair. But, like, in general, bringing back Chris Jones, Carl Loftus, that's still better than most teams have out there, period.
Yeah, those two in particular don't worry me. But what you mentioned about the secondary might be, like, you're calling it a secondary problem, but what I might be saying is maybe it exposes the defense.
Yeah.
Maybe middle of last year. You might remember this conversation. Like, middle of last year in the season, we were sitting around, and I told you as we were looking at the sack numbers and the Chiefs were right at the top again, I was like, I don't think the defensive backs are getting enough credit for the flowers for making sure this defensive line stays at the top of the league in sacks. I mean, is it the defensive line? Like, it's weird because if the secondary's worse, it does make the defensive line, but it exposes you in a way, right? They were making your job easier this whole time. Maybe that's where you were getting some of these sacks. Maybe that's where some of those sacks were coming from.
Did you want them to change the defensive line? I mean, the last two years, this defensive line's been top three, top five in sacks.
I've told you I would have approached in the draft probably.
Okay.
You and I had a long conversation about what to do with that first pick, and I told you I'd have been open to defensive line. I didn't think they really addressed it in the draft much, and instead they gave Mike Dana the money, who's been a very solid.
Dana's been a really
solid player for this team. I can't really complain much about what he's offered this team. I'm just telling you, and look, they went to the Super Bowl, so it's not that bad. The running back here is so funny to me because they returned, remember, it was like 21 of 22 starters or whatever, and we're like, this is a good thing, right? And then eventually, sometimes people can kind of figure out where you are. But they went to the Super Bowl.
They still made it to the Super Bowl. Yeah, it wasn't because they ran it back. It wasn't because they ran it back. It was also the COVID year was easier to run it back in terms of not bringing new players because you didn't have the same offseason.
The obvious answer is corner or left tackle. I'm just saying keep an eye on the defensive line as, you know, players get older. We talk about this in Father Time and a million other things. They just... It's been a very effective unit, and if for some reason it fell back a little bit, that would significantly impact their ability to play high-level defense that we're used to. Just trying to look. Somebody said, scary news out of Cleveland. What happened with Dante Foreman?
One of the running backs is got carted off, I believe, today.
Oh, man, direct blow to the head and neck pain.
Yeah, he got carted off of practice in Cleveland.
Transported via helicopter off the
that's the part that...
That's scary.
Hopefully that was just an accessibility thing more than a... You know, had it. You know, hopefully it was just that was the.
You're trying to get to a level one trauma center as fast as you can, and fortunate, of course, that you've got the access to those things.
That's something to. That's something we'll keep an eye on. Also, other running back news today: Tariq Cohen of the Jets, former Bears running back, announced he's retiring.
I thought he was trying to make a comeback.
He was. Yeah, he's dealt with a ton of knee injuries. He was trying to make a comeback. They thought maybe he would help them on their kickoffs in New York, the Jets, and he made the announcement today that he's retiring. That's two running backs in the last 24 hours retiring: Tariq Cohen, and then yesterday or 2 days ago, Rashad Penny.
Tough gig, man. That's
and they're all in their, you know, 27, 28, 29 range.
That's a really, really, really tough gig. We're watching practice, by the way, not that long ago. Mahomes, once again, which is a staple of practice, threw it deep to Xavier Worthy. This time it was complete, but pretty much every practice. Like, if you want to be like, what am I going to get out watching practice today, Cody? Two or three times of practice, you will watch Mahomes attempt to throw it deep to Xavier Worthy.
It's an emphasis.
It's a lock.
Yeah, it's an emphasis.
It's a lock.
That it should be. It can't. It's something they didn't have last year, and... Doesn't mean they're just throwing the deep every single time in a regular season game, but that's something that they didn't have, and you got to try to build up that connection, especially with Worthy. I mean, let's not forget with him, he missed, you know, 95% of the offseason, other than that quick little rookie OTA, then he was dealing with the hamstring injury. And knock on wood, the great news is that has not been the story here at camp. He had strep for a couple days. Okay, whatever.
And we were a little worried about missing some practice.
But the hamstring has not been talked about, and that's great. That's a great sign so far. We're over a week into camp. We're now almost a week into padded practices being an option. Last Friday was the first padded practice, so that's huge. But I think they're trying to get him up to speed. They throw a lot at him, and so you kind of feel more confident in what you're getting from more of a veteran in Hollywood Brown deep. But Xavier Worthy, this is all new to him, so I think it makes sense. If you're going to take some shots, keep testing the rookie.
So I see that Eric Stonestreet is here.
He is.
And as you well know, he's been fake Andy Reid, or he's not been fake Andy Reid. He's been like Andy Reid's brother.
He's not doing that again this year, I don't think. There's no cameras around him this time.
Did I showed you yesterday, you and Speck after the show yesterday were floored because I showed you the photo of the Nebraska quarterback
Raiola.
Walking into camp, and then they put out some highlight clips of him in practice. Is he trying to steal Patrick Mahomes' identity?
Well, look, if you're trying to mimic...
He's going with the exact same look, play, number. Well,
so if you're a quarterback... And you are trying to replicate someone's game, I'll tell you, the best quarterback in football is not a bad person to try to replicate. He has the same trainer. Bobby Stroup is his trainer.
What's going on?
He's wearing number 15, as you said.
He's in Adidas?
Oh, I mean, he
transferred to an Adidas school.
Yeah.
I want to remind you,
yeah,
that's not where
whatever.
He originally had committed.
Crazy, honestly. Looks just like him, except maybe about 25 pounds heavier.
Okay, that's rude. You know.
Come on! You saw the photo too. The jokes people wanted.
Yesterday called him Patrick Mahomes. I'm like, that's just not nice.
He is a bigger version of Patrick Mahomes. That is accurate. I think that's fair.
Yeah.
But his the way he releases the ball, like all of it, it's identical. Doesn't mean he's going to be anywhere near as good as he, but he's identical as Harrison Butker just kicked a field goal and went over the crowd and over our tent. You're going to go run and steal that football? Go run.
I mean, I didn't have a football from Chiefs.
A fan did take it, and I think they should run and go.
The kid picked it up
and thinks they got a football. Unfortunately, bad news. They're going to make you give it back.
This guy's looking for it.
Yeah, just let it be. Let it be. They got plenty of footballs. The Raiola thing is it's just wild to see someone look so similar, and not just the way he dresses, but the way he throws the football.
The way he moves.
And if you're a Nebraska fan,
it's exactly the same.
Fan just praying that he's 10% of Patrick Mahomes.
Yeah. I mean, would 10% of Patrick Mahomes help you compete for the
You mean he's going to be the starting quarterback for Nebraska this year in the Big Ten? Nebraska?
He was the number one overall recruit, wasn't he?
Yeah, I believe so. Raiola?
Yeah. and he decided to go, like, his dad's coaching there. What, I don't know, mm-hmm. like all the back alley
yeah,
stuff.
Yeah, is it dad or uncle? I don't remember.
I don't remember. I think his dad played at Nebraska and then, like, an uncle coached.
Who knows? We'll see. You know, it's there's always a lot of hype with that program. We shall see if it actually happens this year.
I honestly couldn't believe it. He wore the same shaped sunglasses. Hmm. He got the same haircut. He was wearing the same, like, shirt, shorts, shoes combo. He was out here throwing like him. I'm like, did you? Like, and we all did this as kids, right? We all stood in a mirror and, like, I did Ken Griffey Jr.'s swing or we sat in the back. Like,
sure.
But, like, he took it to an extreme. And it's not like he wasn't. I mean, how old was he when he was watching Mahomes play in the NFL? Like 13, 14, I guess? So maybe this makes – how old is he now? 19? So he's probably like a teenager, like an early teenager?
Mahomes,
it's remarkable. You should look at the photo. If you haven't seen it, go to Nebraska's Twitter page and take a look for yourself.
Mahomes quote tweeted the photo of Raiola walking into camp and just looking identical to him. And Mahomes said, that's my little cuzzo. And he trains with the same people, so –
I'll tell you what, Bobby Stroop trains both Bobby Wood Jr. and Patrick Mahomes. That man's got a blank check to train any athlete he wants right now.
But that's also what I'm saying. As funny as it is, like, if you are going to replicate yourself, I mean, I don't fault the kid for trying to replicate Patrick Mahomes.
Yeah.
Seems like a good opportunity or a good individual you would want to replicate.
That seems like the right choice. Trainer, nutrition, any of them.
Text line says, we haven't been good since 1997. Let Nebraska have Mahomes 2.0, please.
Let him, you know, I think they would take Mahomes 1.0. They would just take
Mahomes 0.25. You know,
and Mahomes, like, didn't do a lot of winning in college, but boy, was he fun. And Texas Tech gets to claim him forever, you know? And he's done plenty of winning at the pro level. That hasn't been the issue. Obviously, it turns out Texas Tech's problems were not Patrick Mahomes related. Patrick Mahomes would have won a national championship if he was at a real, like, a big-time program, right? If he was at Georgia during that run, they win the national championship.
Probably so. I guess in college he was making more mistakes. He cleaned up his game, but still, yes. I mean, remember, though, coming out of college, people thought he was a second-round pick, not a first-rounder, and we know the rest of the history.
And then he was a low first-rounder, then he was a mid-first, and then he went 10th.
Yeah.
So, like, people got a good look at him there for a little bit.
We'll see. I mean, you never know what you're going to get when you watch Nebraska football, you know? There's going to be some form of entertainment. Just depends on which way.
Has someone fact-checked this? They said he's dating a girl named Brittany. No,
I think that's a joke, right? That's got to be a joke, right?
No.
That has to be a joke.
No way. I refused. It has to be. It's but, like, after watching those photos yesterday, I have to kind of believe it a little bit, don't I?
I mean, I'm guessing it's a joke. There's no chance, right?
Man, I don't know. I don't know anymore.
Okay.
I'm going to look it up. I mean, they got me enough on the joke that I got to look it up.
All right, we'll let you look that up. Up next, we continue broadcasting live here at Chiefs training camp on a Thursday morning in St. Joe. We'll talk some more Royals baseball. And one thing that could be the best ever with a Royals lineup, and we'll see if you guys agree, that's next here on Cody and Gold.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep, and when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience because Purple mattresses are made with a gel flex grid. The gel flex grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips and support in others like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the gel flex grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines Gel Flex Grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off.
It's a good thing baseballs already have stitches, because the way these ball players are hitting them, yeah, they'd need stitches if they didn't already have them. So the next time you're watching a poor little baseball smacked off the wall in center, keep that little fella in your thoughts. It's hard to be a baseball right now. Baseball is something else. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Back here in St. Joe, we're at Chiefs training camp, broadcasting live inside of the Comcast business tent, powering possibilities. Again, a reminder coming up a bit later on today, we'll have Matt Verderam from Sports Illustrated joining us here on site. He's making his training camp tour. He was in Minnesota yesterday, I believe, so he's now in Kansas City. We'll get a national perspective on how Chiefs camp has been going and some of the storylines there. We'll also have Josh Vernier in about 2 hours, 12:30. Josh Vernier, our Royals insider, will join us normally on Wednesdays, but obviously yesterday, day game for the Royals, so we move Vern to today. So we'll talk to Josh about the moves the Royals made and now the fact that they're in the month of August. And as we started the show discussing, you're where you're at, 11 games above 500, tied for second in the Central and tied for that second wild card spot. And maybe talk about this lineup in the middle of this lineup in particular. Yeah, it is the headline by Bobby Wood Jr., but you start thinking about what you have and why, but frankly, why Bobby hasn't been getting walked that much.
Well, because
even though he's on pace to take more walks than last year, but still, you would think that the way he's producing that there'd be more walks, even intentional walks, that is.
I had to take a look at this because I was like, I try not to be too flippant and just say it to say it gold, but instead actually process the thought and decide whether or not I believe it.
That's always good.
But when I mean, in radio, I don't think everybody always does that. I think sometimes in radio and TV entertainment, they might do it a little bit different. But I tried to really think about it, and I came to the conclusion after seeing this stat, which I'll give you in a minute, after seeing this stat yesterday, that this is the single best middle of the order in Royals history. So you can go back through the 70s and some of these other teams that really could hit and had a lot of very good players and future Royal Hall of Famers. I think this one can hit better than any middle of the order. Certainly in my lifetime, I didn't go back through every team in the 70s to take a look. But right now, the Royals are the only team in baseball with three guys with 70-plus RBI, and there is no weak link based on the way that they're hitting right now. Bobby Wood Jr., at the pace he's going, will probably end up being a Hall of Famer in baseball. I don't know. Crazy to say that after, like, 3 years in baseball, but I don't know. If you made me bet, if you gave me $10,000 and I had to bet it one way or the other and it was even money, I bet he's a Hall of Famer, Gold. I'm sure you would, too. Salvador Perez, yep. I think, is going to have a real possibility for that. And then Vinny is just an all-around incredibly solid hitter. Vinny leads baseball in sac flies. Vinny takes the ball the other way. He puts it in the gap. He's got a little bit of power. It's not the most powerful. It's not the most home run heavy middle of the order. This is the best 3-2-3-4 they've ever had, which is, it tells us one thing. This is their offense. If they're going to be good offensively in a game, in a series, it's coming for
them. Well, we've seen it, Cody, because when they struggled against the Diamondbacks in that series a week ago or less than a week ago, when they've had those type of games in a series that turns out to be frustrating, yeah, we all headline and talk about the bullpen and the issues that the bullpen have had. But a lot of those, including that Cubs series last weekend, a lot of that was the offense disappeared. You know, there was a game not too long ago where they didn't have a hit after the fourth inning. And then you look and you're like,
well, Bobby and Salvi were 0 for 8.
Right? So, yeah, I mean, the offense runs through your best players, your star players. One is an MVP candidate, as you said. Another one is potentially a future Hall of Famer. And the other has been a clutch sacrifice fly and RBI guy in Vinny Pasquantino. So that makes sense. You know, you're right. I mean, historical context, is it the best over? I mean, when else have they had back-to-back, you know, a hitter like Bobby with
Salvador
Perez?
Two other times
Perez,
in their career,
like,
they've had 300 RBI guys in the same lineup. Yeah. And it's the guys you would think. It's like when Dye and Rand, you know, like it was the time when we thought that they were going to be pretty good at baseball and had a lot of really good players. It didn't amount to anything, and eventually all those players went to go play with people in different uniforms across the board. That's the time. And look, I'm not like George Brett, obviously. At this point, the way Bobby Wood Jr. is hitting, George Brett heyday, and then you're like, who are the two players you can surround them with? That's what you're asking, right? And there are plenty of Royals Hall of Famers and a lot of really great players who played during that time. But this is as impressive as I can remember. And part of it is because Salvi's having a great year. I'll admit. But Salvi's had multiple great years offensively over the course of his career. He's got the random, oops, I broke the Royals home run record years. He's got the this year where it's like, oh, he you know, last night he set a career high in walks in a season. It's August 1st. He's got 60 more games or 55 more games to try to take a walk. He just had a career high. Some of it is the level they're currently playing at. But, I mean, this is peak. This is peak offense. That's why I'm not as worried about the one spot sometimes, because just as long as those three guys are going, they'll probably get something offensively.
I mean, I think you would say that about a lot of teams, though, right? I mean, unless you're looking at a Dodgers lineup, which has just got like three MVPs.
Well, that's not fair.
You know, otherwise, I think most teams' success in a playoff series, other than having a dominant rotation, and luckily the Royals have a dominant 1-2-3, it looks like, you would say, yeah, I mean, if I told you in a Yankees series, because we've seen this play out for the Yankees where their bats go ice cold in October and they get eliminated early, if Judge and Soto aren't hitting in a three-game series, well, then the Yankees are probably getting eliminated as well. You know what I mean?
The Royals starting pitching can still win it. They were, as you remember, the whole start of their season, Gold, was them winning 2-0. And the starting rotation absolutely putting them all on their back and dragging their ass across some wins. That's not the case anymore. Renfro, everyone's seen his stats. Since May 1st, he's hitting like 300 with a 350 on base percentage and an OPS over 800. And that's just, those are guys down the line. They got other guys hitting okay.
Well, now it's clear, too.
The
season of outfield discussion, now it's clear. The trade deadline is passed. I mean, this is the outfield. This is your outfield.
And there's not some guy in AAA.
No.
Drew Waters is back in AAA. There's not some guy in AAA there
and we know what,
calling up to
I
replace.
I think we know what Drew Waters is. He's, you know, I mean, so you know what you're getting at that point. So this is the outfield that you're going to roll with. And the only mix, you know, they're going to mix and match a little bit with particular pitching matchups. But Mikel was back in the leadoff spot yesterday. That's because Massey wasn't in the lineup. So I'm curious tonight, is Michael Massey back in the leadoff spot, or is it Mikel Garcia? We'll see. I think that's still going to be, as we talked with JJ yesterday, it's going to be a matchup driven for now.
Well, and that's fine. Honestly, if they want to do by committee, fine. But I would say, like, if you're going to take it that kind of matchup driven, take it one step further. If the starting pitcher tonight for Detroit, Hunter Renfro, is 9-for-12 career, gets put his ass first. Like, choose whoever is most likely to get a hit. Because right now, anybody who doesn't get on base in front of Bobby Witt Jr. is actively hurting this team, and I'm frustrated with him. Bobby Witt Jr. is getting on base 50% of the time. Actually, he's getting a hit 50% of the time this last month. He's getting on base like 55% of the time the last month. You have to get on base in front of him. It's too important because there's a 50-50 shot. He might drive you home or get you home or get you a third. Or we've seen Vinny take more of those sacrifice flies. Take some of those ground outs where I think he's trying to pull the ball a little bit in order to at least to set up second and third with nobody out. Because Salvi, he's had a lot of productive outs too. Even when Vinny's not getting on base, he's had a lot of productive outs. He sacrificed bunt into the first inning
other day. That was interesting.
They lost that game.
That was interesting the other day. No, but yesterday Jake Eisenberg was talking about on the broadcast. I believe it was Jake. He mentioned that Vinny's a couple sack flies away from the Royals' regular season record, you know, in terms of in Royals' history for sacrifice flies. It speaks to the job that he's been able to do and come up in crucial situations. As I said, we'll talk some more Royals baseball throughout the show today. We've got Q's coming up also in about 7 minutes or so, as Q is back in the studio producing the show all week as Drew is out on vacation. Drew will be back with us on Monday. I didn't catch the morning show. I guess they were talking. They had an issue with Drew. I don't know what it was.
Oh, what was it?
I'm not sure. We need maybe the
let us know. Text line 913-586-7610.
We had a step away. I heard a tease from Dusty about something with Drew that I'm not sure. I'm not sure what happened. I didn't know if there was something that was tweeted out. I have no clue.
I'm still laughing. The text line, now that we're asking about Drew, we'll see what they're doing. The entire text line before that was just people talking about the other things that Raiola does. He's got two dogs named Steel.
Friend named Travis.
He's got a friend named Travis. I mean, dude, it looked like he was trying to steal the man's identity. He's walking into the stadium, and it kind of looked like he was trying to steal his identity. And so that at least changed the math at least a little bit. I saw yesterday, and I know this is going to seem like we're picking on a guy that you and I both don't like, right? So it's probably a little bit different, but yesterday at Jets camp, there was a bit of a hubbub over the last couple of days because it turns out Aaron Rodgers and Garrett Wilson were getting along. Why was there a little bit of a dust-up? Well, because somebody dared say something different to Aaron Rodgers than what was his original plan. Q, do we have this audio from Kyle Brandt? He was on Good Morning Football yesterday. He spoke about the Aaron Rodgers situation, and I think he might have nailed it, Gold. So before we bury the guy, this is what Kyle Brandt had to say about what happened with Aaron Rodgers and why sometimes he has these dust-ups.
One does, and they're just surrounded by sycophants and enablers, and I think they're actually parts for someone to be like, I actually don't like your idea, and here's why. Like, there's a classic Sopranos scene where someone says to Tony, who's the boss, like, you know, they just laugh at your jokes because you're the boss. and then he tells an intentionally bad joke at dinner. And they just go around to all these Tonys and Sylvan. They're all laughing.
Slow motion. They're all dying
laughing.
And he's
just like, wow, they don't really think I'm funny. I wish someone would say, hey, T, that joke's not that good. That's what he's doing here. And Davante Adams was just talking to Shannon Sharpe about this. I just saw the conversation. He was telling the story of one time it was Packers at Cowboys, and Rodgers threw him a back shoulder in the end zone, and they just missed, and they weren't on the same page. It was the end of the game. And they're coming back to the huddle, and Rodgers is getting the call. And Davante just says, no, throw it to me again. Throw it to me again. And Rodgers is like, all right, run the same play. They run the same play, throws it to him again, touchdown, beat the Cowboys. And Davante himself was like, you know, people don't really talk that way to Aaron. Like, no one tells him that. No one says, throw it to me again. I was a rare guy who'd doing it. Garrett Wilson is saying basically either throw it to me again or like, no, I want the route that way. And I think that is not only what Rodgers wants, I think it's exactly what he needs. And if we're going to really do this thing, it's not just going to be, well, it's the Aaron show and he'll be spectacular. And then, you know, mistakenly in the divisional round, we just won't be on the same page. So I think I'd be worried if this wasn't happening. Yeah.
So when I say this is where I think he's wrong, at the beginning, I think he nails it. He's been surrounded by yes men for years now, gold. And while some people are like, well, he doesn't just want that all the time. Well, then why is he getting in fights with Garrett Wilson? You know? Why is he mad that somebody pushed back and said they want something their way instead of his way?
Yeah, I mean,
the Jets are going to stink again. I that was my stance last year. And look, I was right, but also, like, there's a pretty big asterisk on my being right because Aaron Rodgers didn't play for his team. I think he's surrounded by too many people who tell Aaron what he wants to hear. And when he gets pushback in the early part of his career, it doesn't make sense. Here's the other problem. Aaron Rodgers is far too talented to not have won more in his NFL career. So something's holding him back. What is it, Gold? What's been the thing that has stopped Aaron Rodgers from succeeding as much as he should have succeeded? And the answer is he wants somebody to do it his way. And if it's not his way, he's going to be upset about it.
Yeah, look, so fight is a bit much. They were having
verbal disagreement.
Garrett Wilson and Aaron Rodgers weren't fighting. But in terms of not being on the same page, I think it's something to monitor. I would agree with you that it does not stun me one bit that maybe Aaron Rodgers thinks he has the answer to everything and that he doesn't want to take feedback from a teammate. That is not shocking whatsoever. I think we've seen plenty of evidence of why that's not shocking. As far as the Jets this season, look, it is all going to come down to Aaron Rodgers. He is one of the more fascinating storylines yet again heading into the season. So much in the AFC could change if he actually is the same Aaron Rodgers that he was a couple years ago. If he's that quarterback, then the Jets are absolutely going to be one of the three or four best teams in the AFC. It's that simple, man. Like, there's a ton of talent on the roster. I don't think their coaching staff is great. I don't trust them. But if Aaron Rodgers looks anything like the guy that won an MVP award not that long ago, but he's coming off an Achilles injury, if he's anywhere near what he was, then the Jets are going to be a headache for teams. So, I mean, it's that simple. There's way too much talent in that wide receiver room.
I just think he's like 50. He's coming off a major injury, and he's already not on the same page with his wide receivers. It ain't happening. It's just not going to happen. The Jets,
So what do you think they're going to be this year?
Bad. Well, not bad. I mean, I don't think they're going to win four games with Aaron Rodgers. They won seven games.
Really? You think that bad?
Yes.
See, I think they're winning 9-plus easily.
They play in a difficult-ish division. You think they're 9-plus easy?
Yeah, I think
last year you thought they were going to be like 12, but also,
Aaron Rodgers.
We don't know. I can't prove that you're wrong.
Yeah, Aaron Rodgers got hurt four snaps into the season. Who knows, right? I mean, they were running Zach Wilson and the other guy.
But we can talk about this all the time. Quarterback is the only position in which you can legitimately argue that level of swing.
Yeah.
But if they were going to win 12 games, I don't think an Aaron Rodgers is the difference between them winning 12 or 4. Like, I don't think a quarterback is eight wins.
I don't know.
Eight wins?
Dude, we all saw the QB play the Jets had last year.
Really
now, they
bad.
Also had a horrific offensive line, so that line is going to have to be better. But
which we talked about going into camp. I think Matt Verderham is going to join us later, talked about that when he witnessed that at Jets.
I think, you know, the Bills, people have written them off too early. If we're just talking about the AFC East, you know, the Bills are a favorite in that division, and I think they still should be the favorite. When you have Josh Allen, your window's never closed. I get there's questions about what they look like without Stephon Diggs, but
the receiver crew,
I think it's fitting that the Bills are the favorites in that division. That's going to be just an ultra-competitive division with the Miami Dolphins still having Tyreek Hill and Jalen Waddle. We know early in the season, I'm sure we're going to be saying the same thing. It's going to be mid-October, Cody, and everybody's going to say, wow, this Dolphins offense, man, holy crap, they're so good. Nobody can stop them. Then it'll be December and it starts getting cold.
And they're just one-sided and can't stop.
They're one-sided and they're not as explosive and some soft tissue. Issue injuries happen for Tyreek. He misses a game, and Jalen Waddle misses a game or two, and all of a sudden they have problems again. So I think it'll still be a Bills or Jets winning the division conversation. I don't know if the Dolphins will be playing the final game of the regular season like they were this past year.
I think the
year.
Dolphins are better than the Jets. And the Dolphins have very serious flaws in their own right, but they at least know who they are. The Jets are still going to have to go through that part of the process.
What
the hell are you?
I know, but it really is simple. Like, it's not often you can be like, it is so simple for the Jets. Is Aaron Rodgers capable of being a top five or top ten quarterback still? If he is, they're going. I do think it is that simple. I'm not saying they're going to win the Super Bowl, but if Aaron Rodgers is anywhere near why they brought him in, then the Jets will be an issue for the AFC East and therefore one of the top three or four teams. And if you're a top three or four team, then you're a contender in the AFC and potentially could be a problem for anybody.
I know it's like, it's just weird in the NFL because someone would be like, it wasn't that long ago he's winning MVPs, which is not unfair, but in football terms, it sometimes is kind of a lifetime.
Yeah.
Because it was 2021, he finished with 37 passing touchdowns, 4 interceptions, and 4,100 yards. It was a tremendous year. The year before they had 48 passing touchdowns.
Yeah, look.
And 4,300 yards. But that was 4 years ago in an intact ACL.
Look, I'm trying to balance Achilles this year.
Yeah.
Trying to balance my expectation from last year. Because remember, last year I thought Aaron Rodgers was going to have a great year.
Yeah, you thought they were going to be 11-12 win team and compete for the top of the conference.
As we discussed, he tore his Achilles four snaps in. I had a long shot MVP ticket on Aaron Rodgers last year, Cody. That was done four snaps.
You got one this year?
Four snaps. I do not. I'm not betting on him this year. My MVP bets when we start up the betting show. But right now, Josh Allen's one of my favorite ones. He's one of the favorites anyway, but I actually think there's some nuance to it that makes sense. We'll explain that once we get closer to the season. And then further down the board, it's not an Aaron Rodgers type. I actually think there's some value potentially. It's got to be on a team that wins a division, right? We discussed this. I still think there's an opportunity once again for us to be talking about. I know you're down on them, but if they shock the division, everybody loves C.J. Stroud, but if they shock the division in Trevor Lawrence, he will have narrative
Trevor
on his side because everybody's kind of writing him off.
And people still like, I'll say this, people who cover the NFL and vote for things like that, they still love Trevor Lawrence. They're just, it's the Jags' fault. They're holding him back. They love Trevor Lawrence. So, yeah, there's probably some truth there.
All right, Q, let's go back to the studio. Q's. What do we got today?
We're going to continue our trend of talking the Olympics, but I also wanted to start off with a feel-good story that happened in sports yesterday. I don't know if you guys saw this or not, but Jackson Holliday hit a grand slam yesterday for the Orioles. He became the youngest player in Orioles history to hit a grand slam, and he went to go track the ball down, and it turns out a five-year-old and his father were at the game and caught the ball. The five-year-old did give the ball back to Jackson Holliday, and in return, Jackson Holliday gave him a bat and met with the kid. But the feel-good story about this is not just that, but the fact that the five-year-old talked to Jackson Holliday, and his first question to him was, how did the Gatorade feel? And he responded, Jackson Holliday responded,
classic
he said,
five-year-old question.
It is. Jackson Holliday responded, cold, really cold.
Yeah. As a parent of a current five-year-old, almost six, I would say that that's a classic five-year-old question. I would also say, it's so weird in those situations because it's a big moment for them. It's his first career home run. It's he got sent down and called back up. You can get more than a bat. I'm gonna say, Gold, you can get more than a bat and quick chat.
Bat
with Jackson
and
some bat
tickets and a photo, and everybody's happy.
Don't you remember that McGuire turned down that guy because he said he wanted to just meet him? He's like, I'm not gonna meet him. I'm like, what? For the home run that broke the home run record? And then it got sold.
Yeah, that's a whole different – that ball has value. Jackson Holliday, if he turns out to be a superstar, it has value. Otherwise, it's way more valuable to Jackson Holliday. That ball's not going to be valuable to you. You know what I mean? Like, the marquee milestone ones, those are the ones that people have an issue giving up without getting way more.
I mean, that's a career home run.
I understand.
That's a grand slam.
It's more valuable to Jackson Holliday, though.
That's what I'm saying. Like, ask him for some season tickets or something.
Yeah,
asking
but like
for a bat and a glove, you and have a signed to be, jersey. And,
but you have to be realistic because to you, the random fan, it's not like that ball, once you leave the stadium, is really not worth anything to you.
Well, now that they have authenticators, you could get authenticated before you leave.
Yeah, but you know the issue now. A lot of those parks, they're refusing to authenticate it, you know, if you don't trade it.
If I don't cough it up?
That's happened.
I've got to live in the stadium now? That's nonsense. Okay, what's next, Q?
We're going to head to the Olympics where a female American swimmer named Katie Ledecky becomes one of the oldest.
I've heard of her, yeah.
Heard of her. She is pretty good, I'm told.
Yeah, she actually earned her gold medal. She was the youngest swimmer to earn a gold medal where she swam for the U.S. Olympic team back in London 12 years ago. She was 15 at the time, and she earned a gold medal in the 1500-meter freestyle, which I looked it up. That is 30 laps in a pool. She then won another gold medal again, and she finished the 1500-meter by finishing more than 10 seconds in front of everybody else.
That's the most jarring thing, is that when you see that still shot, these are the other people who are the greatest at this.
Yeah, and a final heat, too.
She wrecks them.
Yeah.
It's not close gold. It's domination.
What question do you have?
How many laps do you think you could do an Olympic swimming pool and feel confident that you could beat people of your around athletic ability?
Two. I used to swim laps for exercise, too.
The Olympic-style pool. Now, like, two laps in a certain time or just,
No. You're going up against people of your similar athletic ability, and you need to beat them by about 10 seconds. How many laps do you think you can do and accomplish that?
Dude, I mean, I'm going to have
one.
To take breaks.
One. And I probably can't accomplish it.
I thought you were just
one.
Asking me how many consecutive could I swim without stopping, and I thought the answer was one down and one back.
One max. I don't think you can do one down and one back without like his constant smooth.
I used to swim for exercise.
Yes,
I'm
but Cody,
swimmer.
You and I, we're getting older, man.
I don't know how
to, long. Like, we got to be careful with that. When you were 13, man. Like when it's a little.
I mean, inside the last like 5 years, I used to try swimming for exercise, but like
you're swimming laps though.
I don't know how long an Olympic size. I don't know what the length is on that. I gotta be honest.
Look, one lap if I'm lucky. If I'm lucky, one lap without having to stop, and that might even be. Bold on my in an Olympic
that
style
might be,
pool.
That might not be.
Did you hear they're saying that
maybe it's just one.
That the there's slow water at the Olympics? You're like,
oh,
what do you mean slow water?
What the
hell's
that?
You're like, water's water. No. Turbulence in the water. There was an article about this that it might be 0.5 too shallow, and so it's causing more of the waves. Like by the time the next heat starts and stuff, the cameras in the water are causing more water turbulence too. The camera on the track in lane 4 or 5 or whatever.
Interesting.
There's always controversy.
Interesting.
So it says Katie Lakey has swam near the diameter of the Earth if you add up her training and competitions.
Good God.
I just can't believe that 1,500 meters is 30 laps.
She should be thankful she's in the pool. Did you see that swimmer who vomited like 10 times after he got out of the sin?
Oh, yeah.
Well, that dirty-ass water, man.
Was it the water or just he was over, exerted himself?
Hard to say. People are going to blame the water, that's for sure.
Was he drinking the water to throw up? I'm guessing he or she was overheated. Anyway, go ahead.
Last one here real quick. The U.S. basketball team beat South Sudan in their rematch 103-86. Does this team sort of get over the hump and run all the way to the gold?
Yeah, they're going to win gold.
I think they faced some of their toughest. I think they will win gold.
They're going to win gold, yeah. The showcase games or whatever where they were tightly contested against Germany and South Sudan, it's all good. No, I think they'll be fine. And it's weird that Steve Kerr, the way he's been managing it. I mean, Joel Embiid's barely played. Jason Tatum's barely played. Bam Adebayo led the team in points, I think, yesterday. Just a weird kind of like, I don't know if he's just like keeping everybody fresh or what's going on, but they're going to coast and win a gold, yes.
I am told, by the way, over on Twitch, one by Why Not, one lap is around 55 yards. So you got to swim to the 50.
I don't know, man. I don't know.
I can barely run to the 50.
About as far as my
but a lap, though. So there and back is a lap, right? So that's 100. It's 100 yards.
I was saying there and back.
100. That's 100 yards, actually.
Well, then not maybe one.
I don't.
Maybe half.
I think we're being optimistic with ourselves here. I don't know, man.
Yeah, you might be right.
I don't know. Huh. Thank you, Q. Those are Q's. And the Olympics do continue. Up next, we continue broadcasting live here at Chiefs Training Camp. As we said, a longer practice today. Full pads, a hot one out here in front of the fans at Missouri Western. We're going to get back to the Royals, though, a little bit before we hear from Clyde Edwards-Helaire and have a player join us. A question that actually Dusty posed on the morning show the other day about the Royals I thought was really interesting. And one suggestion that's out there for the Chiefs still makes no sense. We'll get to that here on Cody and Gold.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
It's a good thing baseballs already have stitches. Because the way these ball players are hitting them. Yeah, Yeah, they'd need stitches if they didn't already have them. So the next time you're watching a poor little baseball smacked off the wall in center, keep that little fella in your thoughts. It's hard to be a baseball right now. Baseball is something else. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.